So welcome everybody, and if you weren't here this morning, you can catch up on that online, probably later this evening, or certainly it'll be there by early morning tomorrow. So I will be just recapping on a little bit of what Ratnadeva talked about, so if you weren't there, it'll be fine. You'll know what we're doing right now. So Ratnadeva introduced us to Padmasambhava, and he went into a lot of the sort of historical and the stories and the myths. And in particular, he talked about how Padmasambhava was invited by the ruler to bring, in a way, to help establish Buddhism in Tibet. There had already been some teachers there, and they'd been trying to build a monastery. But according to the story, every night, all the work they did was dismantled by the spirits and the demons of the land. So they could never, get the temple going. And that was why it was suggested that they invite Padmasambhava to come along to help with this, because he was known not only for being a great scholar, but also for being a shaman, a bit mysterious, a bit magical, and having all these siddhis, these magical powers. So it was felt that he would be someone who might be able to help with that. And indeed he did. Now, the story goes that when he went there, the very first thing he did is he went down into the underworld and he converted the demons. Basically he befriended them and got them on side, and then it was possible to build the foundations, to build the temple, and for the Buddhism to be established in Tibet. So obviously a story like that, well, we could take it literally, but probably it's much more effective if we think of it more as being a sort of like spiritual truth, a metaphorical truth. And in fact, Padmasambhava, he's a part historical figure, but he's also very much a sort of mysterious mythological figure. There's this very big two-volume it's a biography of him, The Life and Liberation of Padmasambhava. But there's so many stories that are quite fantastical. Lots of different manifestations of his magical powers and different transformations and all kinds of things happening. But if we think about them literally, it would be hard to believe, but actually they resonate on a different level as a kind of truth that we can recognize on a much more symbolic, archetypal level. So I'm just going to do a couple of quotes from Sangharakshita, who's the sort of founder of Tri Ratna, that I find really helpful and I think very relevant to this session and what we're doing on this retreat. The effort we put into our spiritual development needs to be directed towards the growth of the whole psyche, not just a part of it. We need to unify our energies, and this means enlisting the cooperation of our unconscious energies by means of myth and symbol, and by the exercise of imagination and devotion. The rational approach will not do it on its own. So we do need to unify our energies, get the cooperation of our unconscious energies. And in a way, you could see that's part of the the turning towards the demons, the befriending the demons, you could see is that enlisting those unconscious energies, some of which are quite messy, some of which might be could be seen as quite destructive and can be quite destructive. But if we actually turn towards them, are able to integrate them, accept them, we can then transform them and free up energy towards our spiritual growth that might otherwise have been getting in the way of it. So there's something very much about that need to bring the whole of ourselves, the whole psyche, not just part of it, the rational approach will not do it on its own. And a mother part of that story of Padmasambhava is that when he did go and befriend the demons, all of them were actually guarding a jewel. Yeah. So if you can have that courage to turn towards what's difficult, turn towards the challenges, turn towards all those things that, you know, we find scary or overwhelming or difficult, if we are able to befriend them, enlist them, get into a different kind of relationship with them, that does free up a lot of energy, and it can also be a gateway into something really positive, you know, that's connected with that. So rather than pushing away things, making it other, demonizing it, that phrase, yeah, we get into a much more accepting relationship with it, and that kind of changes things. I don't know if any of you are fans of Philip Pullman, his Northern Lights trilogy and the other books you've got, like the Northern, the Golden Compass and things like that. They did an adaptation on BBC of it, but it's a sort of alternative fantasy world, which is a bit like ours, but the people in that particular world, they all have externally a demon that is a relationship and part of them that usually manifests as a bird or an animal or something, but they're very much in relationship, you know, they're kind of friendly with them rather than denying them, you know. And then people who are coming from a world like ours, they don't have that external demon, but it's suggested that there is an internal version that they just haven't been aware of. So another quote along the same lines, which I have just lost. Did I put it? Sorry. Okay. Also from Sangharakshita. If we look below the rational conceptual surface of the mind, we find vast unplumbed depths which make up what we call the unconscious. The psyche in its wholeness consists of both the conscious and the unconscious. And the unconscious non-rational part of our nature is by far the largest part, and its importance is far greater than we generally care to recognize. Consciousness is like a light froth playing and sparkling on the surface, while the unconscious is like the vast ocean depths, dark and unfathomed, lying far beneath. In order to appeal to the whole person, it isn't enough to appeal just to the conscious, rational intelligence that floats upon the surface. We have to appeal to something more. And this means that we have to speak an entirely different language from the language of concepts and abstract thought. We have to speak the language of images, of concrete form. We have to use the language of poetry, of myth, of legend. So for me, that's why images and different images will speak to us, symbols. Well, some words have very much symbolic meaning, but ritual and mantra also, for me, engage that part of myself to bring into my practice, which is one reason why we're going to be doing a ritual later on today. And in that story, because again, stories and myths are speaking that language often. We can tell the difference between when someone's written a story that's not tapping into that level and something that is, because it resonates. I used to teach primary school and also in nursery, and even like 3 and 4 year olds, they could tell the difference between like a fairy tale that was, you know, speaking that language, and someone who'd written something to get published and probably to get approval of the parents and the school system. You know, they could just instantly know, you know, and it really resonated them, you know. Well, especially Goldilocks was a great big favorite, you know, and but a lot of them, you know, Three Little Pigs, all of them, they resonated on a different level. And at a certain point I was doing storytelling with them and encouraging them to make up their own stories, and it was really quite fascinating to see how they were actually, even with quite simple concepts and language, trying to communicate on that level, and using things like fairy tales to sort of get over those kinds of concepts. So I think that is something very natural to us, yeah, these depths. So rather than thinking of our demons as things that are getting in the way, it's really helpful if we can think of them as being a gateway, being something that can help us in our spiritual practice. Yeah. And it is quite interesting in Buddhism that a lot of the things, you know, there's traditional things like the hindrances to meditation, but those also can all be transformed into what's known as enlightenment factors. Yeah. So that image I showed early in the morning of the Vajra, you know, in a way that's transcending all the dualities, but it also shows things like the poisons being transformed into spiritual qualities, samsara into nirvana, that implicit idea that the two aren't separate in a way, and that in a way you need to engage with samsara before there's any chance of connecting with nirvana. You need to actually work with the difficulties, work with things like ill will and hatred, work with our ignorance, our delusion, our conditioning, our views, our craving and attachment, in order to grow and change and make spiritual progress. You know, Buddhism is very pragmatic in that way. It says that until we are all actually enlightened, we will be influenced by those things. Yeah, those will be things that we're working with, and we can work with in our meditation practice, in our ethical practice, and our actions in the world. We can reflect and try and see through those views, get more awareness, wisdom, insight. And we should be working on all of those things. But it's also saying that until we're enlightened, those will still be an influence. You know, so actually, there's no point blaming yourself or being ashamed of that. In a way, what we are invited to do is to actually do the work, you know, turn towards those. It's not always easy, and we don't necessarily want to spend all our time turning towards the most difficult stuff. You know, depending on what our patterns are, maybe we feel we should be doing that, in which case it's probably much more challenging and probably much more useful to actually turn towards the pleasant and the joyful, you know. But then again, if you're somebody that doesn't want to look at all the difficult stuff, then at some point you need to. You may have come across this phrase, spiritual bypassing, which is basically the idea when we want to just go for the light and all the good things without doing that work. And I think the story that Matadeva was sharing with us this morning of Padmasambhava, you know, and that temple, you know, the foundations kept on being, you know, brought up. They could never build anything substantial until he'd done that work of going down and converting those demons. You know, we need to do that. We can't just ignore our conditioning. You know, sometimes there's difficult stuff, sometimes there's past trauma, but sometimes it may just be that we've grown up with particular views in our families, our society, school, whatever, that are getting in the way. But we need to work with those, see through them. And we all have fear. We all have things that we crave, you know. We know that there's dukkha in the world, that we don't have things the way we want them to be. And we don't like that, do we? It causes us suffering, and we crave and we cling, and we get into all kinds of behaviours and patterns as we try to fix our lives, fix samsara. And it doesn't ultimately work. It can work for a little while, but it's not really going to help us to do that deep work of transformation. And liberating ourselves from all those things that get in the way of actually being happy and open and receptive, and, you know, having the kindness, the compassion, the equanimity, that are all kinds of qualities that are seen as part of that experience of awakening our hearts, awakening our minds. So this morning, I read a little bit, just a couple of lines from some guidance that Padmasambhava was said to have given to these three fortunate women. And one of them was about just being open, yeah? During the period of meditation, there is not anything It is simply open. And having that openness, that receptivity to whatever's going on in our experience, to whoever we are, to however we are, not pushing bits away, not rejecting, not denying it. That is one of the things that we need to do in order to do this work of transformation. So we're going to go into groups very soon. I'll invite you to think about, you know, before, just maybe spend 2 or 3 minutes reflecting on or seeing if you can acknowledge that there are parts of yourself that maybe you feel less comfortable or maybe you're self-critical of, that you push away, you deny, or you don't like to spend time with, you know. So similar to a little bit what we were doing this morning. And, but this time, can you maybe imagine what would it be like if you were more open? And can you see any potential jewels that might be released, any energy that might be released, if you did allow yourself to turn towards, accept, own, integrate some of those banished, cut off parts of yourself? Or even if you just stopped having that critical voice of yourself, you know, that internal critical voice that we quite often have, you know, what would it be like if you weren't doing that, if you were just allowing yourself to be who you are? There's a bit of a contradiction in terms of we're trying to grow and change and transform. But then with that, we can get into old habits and think, well, that means I'm not good enough now. You know, I'm not acceptable now, I have to transform because I'm bad or I'm not good enough. Yeah. So what we want to do is try and have a sense of just being open, not judging, allowing the transformation to happen, inviting the transformation to happen, but not from a place of, you know, I need to change, but actually just creating the conditions where change can happen. Yeah. And trusting whatever emerges, whatever develops, you know, trusting yourself in a way that you have innately all these positive qualities, all this potential. We do have this concept of original purity rather than original sin in Buddhism. And that actually, if we can uncover all the things that get in the way, we can get in touch with our Buddha nature and allow it to shine forth. So I don't know if that's made you all very muddled, but anyway, just spend a little bit of just reflecting on, you know, what might be the jewels that are hidden, that those demons might be gardening. What would it be like if you could befriend them? So we've just got a couple of minutes to reflect on that, and then Nadeva will put us into groups. So rather than giving you a specific question, just anything that's arisen from what I've been saying or the session this morning, or just the title, the images, this theme that you want to share. Do not force your mind or your body. That was another line from his guidance. So not trying to force anything to happen, force anything to change, just being open, receptive to what's there. Okay, so Ratnadeva, if you'd like to put people into groups, and you'll have about 20 minutes in the groups. So hopefully people will be in similar groups.